When he turned and walked back through the sand and waded out into the water, I stared at him with tears in my eyes. The sun was setting and the lake was murky. I couldn't see how far out he swam. But he was out there long enough that when he finally began making his way back to the shore, Chris and Jenny were pulling back into the parking lot. Jonah sat back down on my blanket, soaking wet and holding his breath. I remember watching beads of water drip from his mouth.
"I'm breaking up with Jenny."
His admission left me aghast. Then he looked at me pointedly, as if what he was about to say next were the most important words he would ever speak.
"You'll be a great mother, Morgan. Chris is very lucky."
His words were sweet, but the look in his eyes was painful. And for some reason, those words felt like a goodbye, before I even knew it was a goodbye. With that, he pushed off the grass and walked toward the parking lot. My head was spinning. I wanted to run after him, but the weight of the whole day anchored me in place. All I could do was watch as he told Jenny he was ready to go. I watched as they got in his car and pulled away. When Chris started making his way down the hill, I should have been relieved to finally have that alone time with him, but I was devastated. Chris sat down next to me on the blanket and handed me a bottle of water. I loved Chris. I was going to have his baby, even though I hadn't told him that yet. But I felt guilty because in all the time Chris and I had been dating, he'd never once given me a look that trickled down my spine. I was scared I'd never feel that again. I was scared I was wrong, and that maybe I loved Chris, but maybe I wasn't in love with him. He put his arm around me.
"Babe, what's wrong?"
I wiped at my eyes, blew out a breath, and said, "I'm pregnant." I didn't wait for Chris's reaction. I immediately stood up and cried the entire walk back to his car. Even then, I was blaming the tears on hormones, on finding out I was pregnant. I blamed the tears on everything besides what actually caused them. The next day, Jonah told Jenny he wanted to move in with his sister and go to college in Minnesota. He packed up his things, bought a plane ticket, and didn't even come tell me or Chris goodbye. Chris and Jenny were so upset that Jonah had selfishly up and left, but as I was more stunned by the news that I was pregnant, I didn't really have time to care about Jonah leaving. For the next several weeks, I mended Jenny's heartache and forced Chris to focus on us and my pregnancy, rather than the best friend who had abandoned him. I tried not to give Jonah another thought. Little did I know that routine would go on for a long time. Me being Chris's devoted wife, taking care of his house and his daughter and his needs. Me being loyal to my little sister, helping her study her way through nursing school, cleaning up the messes she made of her 20s, giving her a place to stay every few years when she'd need help getting back on her feet. The day I found out I was pregnant, I stopped living life for myself. I think it's time I figure out who I was meant to become before I started living my life for everyone else.
Chapter 16. Clara. Despite knowing I just pissed my mother off by being half an hour late for curfew, I still can't stop smiling. That kiss with Miller was worth it. I bring my fingers to my lips. I've never been kissed like that. The guys I kissed in the past all seemed like they were in a hurry, wanting to shove their tongue in my mouth before I changed my mind. Miller was the opposite. He was so patient, yet in a chaotic way. It was like he'd thought about kissing me so often that he wanted to savor every second of it. I don't know that I'll ever not smile when I think about that kiss. It kind of makes me nervous for school tomorrow. I'm not sure where that kiss leaves us, but it felt like it was a statement. I just don't know what exactly that statement was. My phone buzzes in my back pocket. I roll over and pull it out, then fall onto my back again. It's a text from Miller. Miller.
I don't know about you, but sometimes when something significant happens, I get home and think of all the things I wish had gone differently. All the things I wish I would have said.
Me. Is that happening now? Miller.
Yes. I don't feel like I was entirely forthcoming with you.
I roll onto my stomach, hoping to ease the nausea that had just passed through me. It was going so well. Me. What weren't you honest about? Miller.
I was honest. Just not entirely forthcoming, if there's a difference. I left a lot out of our conversation that I want you to know.
Me. Like what? Miller.
Like why I've liked you for as long as I have?
I wait for him to elaborate, but he doesn't. I'm staring at my phone with so much intensity that I almost throw it when it rings unexpectedly. It's Miller's phone number. I hesitate before answering it, because I rarely ever talk on the phone. I much prefer texting. But he knows I have my phone in my hand, so I can't very well send it to voicemail. I swipe my finger across the screen, and then roll off the bed, and head to my bathroom for more privacy. I sit on the edge of the tub. Hello?
Hey,
he says.
Sorry, it's too much to text.
You're kind of freaking me out with all the innuendos.
Oh, no, it's all good. Don't be nervous. I just should have said this to you in person.
Miller inhales a deep breath, and then on the exhale, he starts talking.
When I was 15, I watched you in a school play. You had the lead role, and at one point, you performed a monologue that went on for, like, 2 whole minutes. You were so convincing, and you looked so heartbroken, I was ready to walk onto the stage and hug you. When the play was finally over and the actors came back out onto the stage, you were smiling and laughing, and there wasn't a trace of that character left in you. I was in awe, Clara. You have this charisma about you that I don't think you're aware of, but it's captivating. I was a scrawny kid as a sophomore, and even though I'm a year older than you, I hadn't quite filled out yet, and I had acne and felt inferior to you. So I never worked up the courage to approach you. Another year went by, and I continued to admire you from afar. Like that time you ran for school treasurer and tripped walking off the stage, but you jumped up and did this weird little kick and threw your arms up in the air and made the entire audience laugh. Or that time Mark Avery popped your bra strap in the hallway, and you were so sick of him doing it that you followed him to his classroom, reached inside your hoodie, and took off your bra and then threw it at him. I remember you yelling something like, "If you want to touch a bra so damn bad, just keep it, you perv." And you stormed out. It was epic. Everything you do is epic, Clara, which is why I never had the courage to approach you. Because an epic girl needs an equally epic guy, and I guess I've just never felt epic enough for you. I've said epic so many times in the last 15 seconds, I'm so sorry.
He's out of breath when he finally stops talking. I'm smiling so hard my cheeks ache. I had no idea he felt this way. No idea. I wait a few seconds to make sure he's done. Then I finally respond. I'm pretty sure he can hear from my voice alone that I'm smiling. First of all, it's hard to believe you were ever insecure. And second, I think you're pretty epic too, Miller. Always have. Even when you were scrawny and had acne. He laughs a little.
Yeah?
Yeah. I can hear him sigh.
Glad I got that off my chest then. See you at school tomorrow?
Good night. We end the call, and I don't know how long I sit and stare at my phone. I can't even process the gravity of this. He actually has real feelings for me. He's had feelings for me. I can't believe I've been so oblivious to it. I eventually unlock my screen because I need to call Aunt Jenny and tell her every bit of that conversation. I'm scrolling through my contacts when it hits me. I can't call her. I can never call her again. When is that finally going to sink in? Lexi doesn't even have a chance to fasten her seatbelt before I assault her with the news. I kissed Miller Adams, and I think maybe we're a thing now? Wow, okay, she says, nodding. But what about Shelby? He broke up with her 2 weeks ago. She takes a moment to let this sink in. I back out of her driveway, and she's staring forward, thinking hard about it. Then she looks at me and says, I don't know, Clara. Seems a little quick, like maybe it's a rebound. I know. I kind of thought the same thing, but it doesn't feel that way at all. I can't explain it, but I don't know. I get the feeling he didn't have this kind of connection with Shelby. I can feel her giving me a look. I'm your friend, so I feel the need to say this, but you sound kind of crazy right now. He dated Shelby for an entire year. You made out with him once, and you think he has more feelings for you than he does for her. It does sound insane, but she wasn't there. You know me better than anyone, Lex. You know I don't fall for guys like this. I think you should take me a little more seriously. Sorry, she says. Maybe you're right. Maybe Miller Adams is madly in love with you, and his 12-month relationship with Shelby was some kind of move to make you jealous. And now you're just making fun of me. It was just a kiss, Clara. You're acting like the two of you are official already. Of course I'm making fun of you. I do see the ridiculousness of it from her point of view, but I still think she's wrong. I drop it, though, because she won't understand it. It was an amazing kiss, though, I say with a smile. She rolls her eyes. Good for you. Just don't make it official yet. It's not official, is it? No, I don't guess so. All we did was kiss. He didn't even ask me out on a date. Good. When he does ask you, pretend you're busy. Why? So it doesn't seem like you like him this much. Her advice is confusing. Why wouldn't I want him to know I like him? Because he might lose interest. You'll scare him away. That makes no sense. It's just how guys work. Let me get this straight. If I like a guy and he likes me, we have to pretend not to like each other or we'll stop liking each other? Hey, I didn't make the rules, she says. She falls back into her seat in kind of a slump. I can't believe this. We've always been single together. This is going to change our friendship. No, it won't. It will, she says. You'll sit by him at lunch. He'll start meeting you before and after school. You'll be too busy to hang out with me on weekends. You work all the time anyway. Yeah, but I could have a day off someday, and you won't want to spend it with me now. Next time you have a day off, I'm going to spend it with you. Promise? I hold up my pinky, and she grips it just as we're pulling into the school parking lot. Lexi nudges her head. Gross, he's waiting for you. Miller is standing next to his truck in the parking spot next to where I always park. Just the sight of him waiting for me makes me smile. Lexi groans when she sees Miller smiling back at me. Ugh, I hate it already, she says. She gets out of the car as soon as I put it in park and looks at Miller over the hood. How serious is this thing between you two? Oh my God. I scramble out of the car and look at Miller wide-eyed. Don't answer that. I turn to Lexi. Stop it. She's looking past me at Miller. Got any single friends since you stole mine? Miller laughs.
I'm sure I can scrounge up a couple.
Lexi shuts her door. Only a couple? She winks at me, then starts walking toward the school by herself. I feel kind of bad, because she's right. Things will change between us a little bit.
How was your night?
Miller asks, pulling my attention back to him. I couldn't sleep.
Me neither,
he says, hoisting his backpack up higher onto his shoulder. He leans in and kisses me, just a quick peck on the mouth.
Were you up all night thinking about me?
I lift a shoulder. Maybe. He walks with me toward the school.
Is Lexi serious? Does she really want a boyfriend?
I don't know. She's my best friend, but I still can't tell when she's kidding or when she's serious.
So it's not just me.
I shake my head just as Miller opens the door for me. Once we're in the hallway, he reaches down between us and grabs my hand like it's second nature. I might be biased, but I like how we fit. He's taller than me by at least 5 inches, but our hands clasp together comfortably. It feels so right. Until it doesn't. 45 days. That's how long they've been dead. And I have no idea how I can possibly walk through these hallways smiling like I didn't just lose 2 of the most important people in my life. It fills me with guilt because my mother never smiles anymore. Neither does Jonah. Not only have I stolen lives because of my disregard for Aunt Jenny's safety while she was driving, but now I've stolen the smiles of all the people my father and Aunt Jenny left behind. I head toward Jonah's classroom, and Miller walks with me, holding the door for me when we reach it. Jonah is the only one inside when we walk into the room, still hand in hand. Jonah is staring at our hands, and again I feel the guilt coursing through me. How long will it take until I don't feel guilty for feeling happy? Shouldn't I be in a depression every second of the day, not just at intervals? I pull my hand from Miller's as I set my stuff onto my desk. Jonah tilts his head in curiosity.
You two dating now?
Don't answer that either, I say to Miller.
Okay, then,
Jonah says, giving his attention back to the work laid out in front of him.
Gotten very far on the film project?
No, I just told Miller I signed him up for it last night. Jonah looks up at Miller.
You still waiting on permission from the girlfriend? I don't have a girlfriend anymore.
Miller looks at me.
Or maybe I have a new one?
He looks confused when he gives his attention back to Jonah.
It doesn't seem like she wants me telling people we're a thing now.
Are we? I ask. A thing?
I don't know,
Miller says.
You're the one who keeps telling me not to answer anyone.
I just didn't want you to feel pressured to label us.
Now I feel pressured not to label us.
Well, Lexi said if I acted like I liked you, it would scare you away. Miller raises a brow.
If that phone call didn't scare you away last night, I think we're fine. If you like me, I want you to act like you like me, or I'll get a complex.
I like you. A lot. Don't get a complex.
Good,
Miller says.
I like you too.
Good, I say in return.
Good,
Jonah says, reminding us of his presence.
Project is due before the end of the semester. Get started.
Okay, Miller and I say in unison. Jonah rolls his eyes and walks back around his desk. Miller backs away from me.
I'll meet you after class.
I smile. He smiles back, but when he leaves the room, my smile turns to a frown. Once again, I feel guilty for even smiling.
Whoa.
I look up at Jonah. What?
The look on your face. Your smile disappeared as soon as he did. You okay?
I nod, but I don't elaborate. Jonah doesn't let it go, though.
Clara, what's wrong?
I shake my head because it's stupid. I don't know, I feel guilty.
Why?
It's only been 45 days, and I woke up happy today. I feel like a terrible person for even feeling good for 1 second. Especially since their wreck was my fault. I leave that part out of my confession, though.
Welcome to the theme park,
Jonah says. I look at him quizzically, so he begins to offer up an explanation.
Right after something tragic happens, you feel like you've fallen off a cliff. But after the tragedy starts to sink in, you realize you didn't fall off a cliff. You're on an eternal roller coaster that just reached the bottom. Now it's going to be up and down and upside down for a long, long time. Maybe even forever.
Is that supposed to make me feel better? Jonas shrugs.
I'm not here to make you feel better. I'm on the same roller coaster you are.
The door opens, and students begin to file in. I can't stop staring at Jonah. His eyes have crinkled at the corners, and his lips have a slight downward turn to them. It tugs at my heartstrings a little, seeing him stressed out, or sad, or whatever that look is. I don't like it. He's always been quiet and a little serious, but his eyes have always seemed happy. I guess I haven't really looked at him long enough since the wreck to really see how much it changed him. It makes me wonder how much it's changed my mother. I hardly look at her anymore either. I wonder if that's because of my guilt. Miller isn't waiting for me after class like he said he would be. I'm not even sure where he is first period, so I linger in the hallway for a minute and wait for him. Clara? I spin around at the sound of my mother's voice. She's holding a folder in one hand, her Louis Vuitton bag in the other. She only breaks out the Louis on special occasions, so I'm not sure what she's doing here and why the Louis is out. But it instantly makes me nervous. What are you doing? She holds up the folder. Applying for a job. Here? They're hiring substitute teachers. I thought I could do that for a few months. See if I like it. I've decided to go back to college. The hall is starting to clear out. I look around to make sure no one is near us. Are you serious? She looks at me like I just offended her. What's wrong with me going to college? I didn't mean to offend her. If she wants to go to college, I'm happy for her. But the last thing I want is for her to test the waters at the school I attend daily. We already can't get along at home. I can't imagine potentially having her in class. I shake my head. I didn't mean... My words are cut off when lips meet my cheek and an arm snakes around my waist.
I was trying to find you. Where do you go for study period?
I look at Miller, wide-eyed. I look back at my mother. My expression prompts Miller to look from me to my mother. I feel him stiffen, and then he drops his arm to his side. It's the first time I've seen Miller look flustered. He holds out his hand to my mother to formally introduce himself. She just stares at his hand, and then looks at me. Miller starts to mumble an apology.
I'm so sorry, Mrs. Grant. I thought you were just one of Clara's friends. You look really young.
My mother is staring daggers at me, ignoring him. She is young, I say to Miller. She had me when she was 17. My mother doesn't miss a beat as she finally addresses Miller. We're very fertile women. Be careful. Oh, my God. I cover my eyes for a brief moment. I can't even look at him when I say, I'll see you at lunch. I can see him nod out of the corner of my eye, and he quickly walks in the opposite direction. I can't believe you just said that to him. You're dating him now? She says, motioning over my shoulder. I thought you said he had a girlfriend. He broke up with her.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because I knew you wouldn't like it.
You're right, I don't.
She's raising her voice now. I'm relieved the hallway is empty. Since the day you started hanging out with him, you've skipped out on your father's funeral, you've done drugs, you're never home, you're late for curfew. He's not good for you, Clara. I don't want to argue with her right now, but she couldn't be more wrong about him. It makes me angry that she's placing my behavior on a guy, rather than on the fact that maybe the few bad decisions I've made have been a result of what happened 45 days ago. That's had way more of an effect on me than a boyfriend. Knowing my texts to Aunt Jenny are what caused this entire terrible situation to begin with. I know nothing about what's going on in your life. You tell me nothing. I roll my eyes. Now that Aunt Jenny isn't here to tell you every little secret? Her anger gives way to an expression of shock. Like she honestly didn't think I was aware Aunt Jenny used to tell her everything. Then she just looks angry. Hurt. Why do you think she told me everything, Clara? It's because all the advice she ever gave you came from me. She's spent the last 5 years cutting and pasting texts I wrote, and then she'd send them to you and pretend they were hers. That's not true, I snap. It is true. So stop treating me like I don't know what's best for you or that I have no clue what I'm talking about. What she's saying about Aunt Jenny isn't true. And even if it were, even if my mother was the one to relay most of the advice Jenny gave me, why would she ruin that for me? Jenny is never coming back thanks to me, and my mother just took the one thing I cherished most about my aunt and threw it in a blender and fed it to me. I hate that I feel like I'm about to cry. I'm so angry with her. At myself. I turn around to walk away before I say something that will get me grounded, but my mother grips my arm. Clara. I yank my arm from her hand. I spin and take a lunging step toward her. Thank you, Mom! Thank you for taking one of the things I loved the most about my aunt and ruining it for me. I really want to call her a bitch, but I don't want to make her angry. I want to make her feel guilty. I want her to feel as guilty as I've felt since the accident. It works, because she immediately looks ashamed for taking credit for the close relationship I had with Aunt Jenny. I'm sorry, she whispers. I walk away, leaving her standing alone in the hallway.
Chapter 17. Morgan. Why did I say all that? Why did I feel the need to take the credit now that Jenny is gone? I know why. I'm upset and hurt by what Jenny did to me, and it hurts even more to know that Clara still considers her a saint. I wanted Clara to know that Jenny had no clue how to offer mature advice, and everything she learned from Jenny, Jenny learned from me. For some reason, I wanted credit for that. Credit I don't need. I'm taking all the anger I have toward Jenny and Chris, and I'm wanting Clara to feel anger toward them, too. I feel terrible. She's right. I hurt her and ruined a memory she had of Jenny, and it was all for selfish reasons. Because I'm mad at Jenny. Because Jenny hurt me. This is all the more proof that I can't let Clara find out about what Jenny and Chris did. Just finding out this one small thing absolutely gutted her. She almost started crying right when I said it. God, this hurts. It all hurts so much that I just want out of here, out of this building. I want to go home. I should have never even considered applying for a job here. What teenager wants to spend all day, every day with their mother? I turn and rush down the hallway, attempting to hold back tears until I make it outside. I'm 10 feet from the door.
Morgan?
I freeze at the sound of my name. I spin around on my heels, and Jonah is standing in his doorway. He can tell immediately that I'm not okay.
Come here,
he says, motioning me into his empty classroom. A huge part of me wants to keep walking, but a small part of me wants to take refuge somewhere, and his empty classroom seems like a good place to do that. He presses a hand to the small of my back and ushers me to a seat. He hands me a Kleenex. I take it and wipe at my eyes, pressing back the tears. I don't know where it comes from, but it's as if the last few weeks of feeling like I'm losing control of Clara hit me, and I'm forcing Jonah into being my temporary therapist. I just begin to ramble. I always thought I was a good mom. It's been my only job since I was 17. Chris worked at the hospital, and my job was to raise Clara. So every time she did something good or surprised us in some way, I felt a sense of pride. I cultivated her into this wonderful little human, and I was so proud of her. Proud of myself. But since the day Chris died, I'm starting to think maybe I had nothing to do with all the good parts of her.
She never acted out before he died. She didn't do drugs or lie about having a boyfriend or where she is. What if all this time I thought she was so great because I was a great mom, but this whole time Chris is the one who brought out the best side of her? Because now that he's gone, she and I just bring out the worst in each other.
Jonah was leaning against his desk when I started saying all that, but now he's seated in the desk across from me. He leans forward, clasping his hands between his knees.
Morgan, listen to me.
I suck in a breath and give him my attention.
You and I are in our 30s. We expect a fair amount of tragedy in our lives, but Clara is only 16. No one her age should have to deal with something this damaging. She's lost in grief right now. You just have to let her find her way, like you did with me.
Jonah's voice is so gentle right now, I actually find a semblance of comfort in his words. I nod, appreciative he pulled me into his classroom. He reaches out and squeezes one of my hands, reassuringly, in both of his.
Clara isn't struggling because Chris is no longer here. She's struggling because he's never coming back. There's a difference.
A lone tear slides its way down my cheek. I wasn't expecting Jonah to actually make me feel better, but he's right. He's right about Clara, and it also makes me think what he's saying applies to me. Chris's presence wasn't nearly as affecting as his absence has been. Jonah still has both of his hands wrapped around one of mine when the door to his classroom opens. It's Miller. He walks into the classroom and stops a few feet from me. He's looking at me like Clara might have gotten hold of him and told him how much I upset her in the hallway. I raise an eyebrow in warning. I hope you aren't about to tell me how to raise my daughter. Miller takes a sudden small step back. His eyes dart from me to Jonah. He looks uncomfortable when he says,
No, ma'am, I'm just...
He points at the desk I'm sitting in.
You're in my seat.
Oh, he's here for class. I look to Jonah for confirmation. Jonah nods and says,
He's right, that's his seat.
Can I mortify myself any more today?
It's fine, I can sit somewhere else,
Miller says. I stand up, motioning toward the chair. Miller hesitantly walks to it and sits down. I'm not crazy, I say to Miller, excusing my behavior just now. And maybe even my behavior in the hallway earlier. I'm just having a really bad day. Miller looks to Jonah for confirmation. Jonah nods and says,
She's right. She's not crazy.
Miller raises an eyebrow and sinks into his chair, pulling his cell phone out of his pocket, wanting out of our conversation completely. More students begin to file into the room, so Jonah walks me toward the door.
I'll be over later to finish taking the door off the hinges.
Thank you. I start to walk out but realize how much I dread going home alone to think about the embarrassment of the day. The only thing that could get my mind off everything is Elijah. Do you mind if I get Elijah from daycare? I miss him.
He'd love that. I already have your name on the pickup list. I'll be over as soon as school lets out.
I smile, tight-lipped, before turning away. I walk to my car, regretting that I didn't hug Jonah or give him more of a thank you. He deserves it.
Chapter 18. Clara. Miller slides his tray onto the table next to me.
Your mother hates me.
He casually opens a can of soda and takes a drink. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and tell him he's wrong. That makes two of us. He swings his head in my direction.
You both hate me?
I laugh, shaking my head. No. My mother hates both of us. I mindlessly spin my water bottle on the table. We got into an argument after you walked away. Not about you, just about... stuff. She kind of hurt my feelings. Miller isn't so casual now. He can see I'm bothered by it, so he turns toward me, ignoring the food in front of him.
You okay?
I nod. Yeah, we're just in a rut. He leans forward and presses his forehead to the side of my head.
I'm sorry this year sucks for you.
He plants a quick kiss on the side of my head and then pulls back, grabbing the pickle spear from his plate and putting it on mine.
You can have my pickle. Maybe that'll help.
How do you know I like pickles? Miller smiles a little.
I've spent 3 years trying not to stare at you while you eat lunch. Creepy, I know.
But also sweet. He grins.
That's me in a nutshell. A sweet creep.
Such a sweet creep. Lexi drops her tray onto the table across from us. I want a sweet creep. Found me a boyfriend yet?
Not yet,
Miller says.
It's only been 4 hours since you put in a request.
Lexi rolls her eyes. Listen to you, talking about time like it matters. You're the one kissing my best friend within minutes of dumping a girl you dated for a year. I groan. Be nice, Lexi. Miller doesn't know you well enough yet to be the butt of your sarcasm. It's not sarcasm. He literally dumped his girlfriend and jumped right into a relationship with you. She looks at Miller. Is that inaccurate? Miller doesn't look like she's pushing any of his buttons. He pops a chip into his mouth.
It is quite accurate,
he says. He looks at me and winks.
Clara knows what's up, though.
Well, I don't, Lexi says. I don't know anything about you. I don't even know your middle name. Is it also a brand of beer? I turn to Miller when her question sinks in. Oh, wow. I didn't realize your first and last name are brands of beer.
It wasn't intentional. Miller was my mother's maiden name.
He faces Lexi.
It's Jeremiah.
So normal, Lexi says, seemingly disappointed. She eats a spoonful of pudding and sucks on the spoon for a second. She pops it out of her mouth and points at Miller. Who's your best friend, Miller Jeremiah Adams? Is he hot? Single?
They're all hot and single,
Miller says.
What exactly are you looking for?
Lexi shrugs. I'm not picky. I prefer blonde men with blue eyes, someone with a dry sense of humor, a little rude, hates spending time with people, doesn't mind a girlfriend who has a shopping addiction, and likes to be right about everything. Athletic, taller than 6 foot, and Catholic. I laugh. You aren't even Catholic. Yeah, but Catholics are strict and have to confess a lot, so he might sin less than, say, a Baptist. Your reasoning is so, so flawed, I say.
I know just the guy,
Miller says, standing up.
Want me to go get him?
Right now? Lexi asks, perking up.
I'll be right back.
Miller walks away, and Lexi looks at me, wiggling her eyebrows. Maybe I do like your boyfriend. He cares about your best friend. I thought you said I wasn't allowed to refer to him as my boyfriend yet. There was a pause when I said that word, she states. I like your boy friend. We watch Miller as he takes a seat at his usual lunch table. He's talking to a guy named Efren. I know him from theater, but he doesn't match any of Lexi's requests. Or demands, rather. Efren has black hair. He's shorter than Lexi, and he's certainly not athletic. He moved here from the Philippines before starting high school a few years ago. Efren smiles at Lexi from across the lunchroom, but she groans and lifts a hand to her face, hiding her view of him. Is he serious right now, Efren Beltran? I was in theater with him. He's really nice. And cute. Lexi's eyes widen, like I'm betraying her. He's like 5'7". She peeks through her fingers and sees Miller walking Efren over to the table. She groans and drops her hand, but doesn't hide her disappointment with Miller's selection.
This is Efren,
Miller says.
Efren, this is Lexi.
Lexi's eyes narrow in Miller's direction before she drags them to Efren. Are you even Catholic? Efren takes a seat next to her. He seems more amused by her reaction than insulted.
No, but I live half a mile from a Catholic church. I'm not opposed to converting.
I already like him, but I have a feeling it's not going to happen so easily on Lexi's part. You look kind of inexperienced, she says, almost accusingly. Have you even had a girlfriend before?
Does online count?
Ephren asks. No, it most certainly does not.
Then no.
Lexi shakes her head. Miller pipes up and looks at Ephren.
I thought you and Ashton dated for a while. That counts, right?
Ephren indicates it doesn't count with a shake of his head.
Fizzled out before it even started. Bummer, Miller says.
How tall is your dad? Lexi asks him. Do you think you're finished growing?
I don't know,
Ephren says, shrugging.
My dad left when I was 3. I have no idea what he looks like.
I can see Lexi's eyebrow rise, albeit very subtly. Mine too. Christmas Day.
That explains the attitude,
Ephren says. Lexi shrugs. I don't know. I think I had this attitude before I was 3. It's probably why he left. Ephren agrees with a nod.
Probably. If we start dating, don't get used to me being around because I'll probably get tired of your attitude and leave too.
Lexi tries not to smile at that, but I'm pretty sure Ephren's sarcasm is sexier to her than his height would be, if he were tall. I honestly didn't expect this to go anywhere, but they're on equal ground when it comes to the jabs. Maybe she'll actually let him take her out on a date. I turn away from them and face Miller. He smiles mischievously before crunching on another chip.
He's a really good guy,
he whispers.
She might be surprised if she'd just give him a chance.
He takes a chip and holds it up to my mouth. I eat it, and then he leans in and kisses me. It's just a peck. Lasts maybe 2 seconds. But it's 2 seconds too long, because a moment later, someone is tapping us on the shoulder. We both look up to see the lunchroom monitor glaring at us.
No PDA in the cafeteria. Put up your trays and come with me. Lunch detention.
I look at Miller and shake my head. I've been dating you 14 hours and you're already getting me in trouble. Miller laughs.
You were doing illegal things with me long before 14 hours ago. You forget about the sign? Let's go,
the lunch monitor says. She follows us as we put our trays away. Miller swipes the bag of chips off my tray when she's not looking and shoves them into the front of his jeans, covering them with his t-shirt. The monitor leads us to the library, where she signs us in for lunch detention. I have literally never had lunch detention in my life. This is a first, but I'm actually a little excited about it. We take a seat at an empty table. The teacher who's monitoring detention is playing a game on his phone while his feet are propped up on the desk. He doesn't pay us any attention. Miller begins to move his chair a little bit at a time so that it goes unnoticed. It reminds me of how he's been moving the city limit sign. He's eventually sitting so close to me that our thighs and arms are touching. His proximity is nice. I like the way it feels being close to him. I also like the way he smells. Normally, he smells like body wash. Axe, maybe. Sometimes he smells like suckers. But right now, he smells like Doritos. My stomach growls, so Miller leans carefully back in his seat and sticks his hand in the band of his jeans. He removes the bag of chips and coughs a little when he opens them to cover the noise of the crinkling bag. The detention monitor looks in our direction. Miller stares down at the table and tries to look innocent. When the guy goes back to playing his game, Miller holds the bag of chips toward me. They're all crushed, so I take the most solid one I can find and slip it into my mouth before the teacher notices. We eat the entire bag this way, taking turns sneaking chip fragments, sucking them until they're soggy so we don't crunch too loud. When the bag is gone, I wipe my hand on my jeans and raise an arm. Excuse me? The detention monitor looks up. Can we get a book off the shelf to read?
Go ahead, you have 60 seconds.
A few seconds later, we end up on the same aisle, and Miller's mouth is on mine, my back against a wall of books. We're laughing while we kiss, making every attempt at being quiet. We're gonna get detention again, I whisper.
I hope so.
His mouth meets mine again, and we both taste like Doritos now. His hands slide from my cheeks down to my waist. His tongue is soft, but his kisses are quick.
We better hurry. We only have 30 seconds left.
I nod, but wrap my arms around his neck and pull him even closer. We kiss for about 10 more seconds before I push him away. His hands remain on my hips.
Come to the theater tonight, he whispers.
You working? He nods.
Yeah, but I can get you in free. I'll make fresh popcorn this time.
Sold. He pecks me on the cheek and grabs a random book off the shelf behind me. I grab one too, and we both return to our seats. It's hard to sit still now. He got me all worked up, and I want to hold his hand or kiss him again, but we have to settle for playing footsie instead. After a while, he leans over and whispers,
Mind if we trade books?
I look at his book, and he closes it so I can read the cover. An Illustrated Guide to the Female Reproductive Cycle. I cover my laughter with my hand and slide in my book. When we're back at my locker after detention, Lexi appears. She wedges herself between Miller and me. He's funny. I think she's talking about Efren. Short, but funny. You two should come to the movies with me tonight, I offer. Lexi makes a gagging sound. In all the years you've known me, have I ever gone to the theater with you? I think about that, and she hasn't. I've just never questioned it.
Do you have something against movie theaters?
Miller asks. Yeah, they're disgusting. Do you know how much semen is on a theater seat? Gross, I say. How much? I don't know, but they should probably research it. She pushes off the locker and walks away. Miller and I both stare at her.
She's interesting,
he says. She is. But now I'm not so sure I want to come to the theater tonight. Miller leans in toward me.
I clean that theater and it's spotless. You better show up. 7?
Fine. I'll be there. But if you could Lysol the entire back row of every room, that would be great. Miller leans forward to kiss me goodbye, but I push his face away with my hand. I don't want detention again. He laughs while he backs away.
See you in 6 hours.
See ya. I don't tell him there's a chance I might not be there. I haven't talked to my mother about it yet. After what happened in the hallway today, it's clear she doesn't want me dating Miller. I'll probably hang out at Lexi's after school for a while, and then lie to her and tell her we're going to the movies. I'm getting pretty good at lying to her. It's easier than telling her the truth.
Chapter 19. Morgan. Jonah knocks softly on the front door before opening it. I'm on the couch with a sleeping Elijah when he lets himself in. I picked him up right before they were about to lay him down for a nap, I whisper. Jonah looks down at Elijah and smiles. They sleep so much at this age. I kind of hate it. I laugh quietly. You'll miss it when he starts refusing to take naps. Jonah nods toward the garage.
I didn't have time to run home after work. Mind if I try to unlock Chris's toolbox?
I shake my head. Jonah heads in that direction, and I put Elijah in his bassinet. I move it to the far side of the living room so that the noise from the kitchen hopefully doesn't wake him. Jonah walks back into the house with Chris's toolbox and carries it into the kitchen. I follow him to help him with the door. I hand him a knife, and it only takes him a few seconds to pick the lock. After he opens the lid, he lifts the top tray out so that he can search through the larger section in the bottom. There's a perplexed look that suddenly appears on his face. That look prompts me to walk over to the toolbox and look inside. We both stare at the contents that were hidden beneath the top tray. Envelopes, letters, cards. Several of them, all addressed to Chris.
Are these from you?
Jonah asks. I shake my head and take a step back. as if the distance will make them disappear. Every time I feel like one of my many wounds might be starting to heal, something happens to rip it open again. Chris's name is written in Jenny's handwriting on the outside of all the open envelopes. Jonah is sifting through them. My heart begins to race, knowing there could be answers to all of our questions inside those envelopes. When did it start? Why? Was Chris in love with her? Did he love her more than he loved me? Are you going to read them? I ask. Jonah shakes his head with assurance. His decision is so final. I'm envious of his lack of curiosity. He hands them all to me.
You do what you need to do. But I don't care to know what they say.
I stare at the letters in my hands. Jonah grabs what he needs from the toolbox and pushes it aside, then gets to work on the last stubborn door hinge. I walk the letters to my bedroom and drop them onto the bed. Even just holding them feels too painful. I don't want to look at them while Jonah is here, so I leave my bedroom and close the door. I'll confront them later. I push myself up onto the counter in the kitchen, and I stare at my feet, thinking of nothing but the letters, no matter how hard I try to think of something else. If I read them, will it give me a sense of closure? Or will it only deepen the wound? Part of me is afraid it'll make it worse. The small memories I have make it bad enough, like the one I had this morning that almost brought me to tears. Jenny and I were downtown last year, a week before Chris's birthday. She was adamant about getting him a particular abstract painting she saw hanging in a store. In all the years I'd been married to Chris, I'd never known him to be interested in art, but the painting reminded Jenny of Chris somehow. I never thought much about it. After all, she was his sister-in-law. I loved how well they got along. The painting hangs above the portable kitchen island I keep shoved against the wall. I'm staring at it now. Jenny was adamant about getting Chris that painting for his birthday last year. Jonah pauses what he's doing and looks over his shoulder at the painting. Then his eyes sweep quickly over me, and his focus is given back to the door. I told her he would hate it, and do you know what she said to me?
What'd she say? Jonah asks.
She said, "You don't know him like I do." Jonah's shoulders tense, but he doesn't respond to that. I remember laughing at her because I thought she was joking, but now, knowing what we know, I think she actually meant it. She was serious about knowing my husband better than I did, and I don't think she meant to say that out loud. Now, every time I look at that painting, I can't help but wonder what story it holds. Were they together the first time he saw it? Did he tell her he loved it? Every memory I have of them, I thought was set in stone. But the more I think about it, about them, those memories are all changing shape. And I hate it. Jonah finally gets the door off the hinges. He pops it up against the wall and then leans against the counter and grabs a Jolly Rancher. I'm surprised when he pops it in his mouth. You ate watermelon.
Huh?
You just ate a watermelon Jolly Rancher. You used to hate them. He doesn't respond to my observation. He's staring at the painting when he begins talking.
The night before they died, when we were all eating dinner at the table, Chris asked her if she was excited about the next day. And I thought of nothing when she said, "You have no idea," because she was supposedly starting back to work the next day, and I assumed that's what they were talking about. But they were talking about staying together at the Langford. They were talking about it right in front of us.
I hadn't thought about that moment, but he's right. Jenny looked Chris in the eye and more or less told him she was excited about getting to sleep with him. Chills creep up my arms, so I rub them away. I hate them. I hate them for lying to you about Elijah. I hate them for rubbing it in our faces. We're both staring at the painting now.
It's such an ugly painting, Jonah says.
It really is. Elijah could probably paint something better. He opens the refrigerator and pulls out a carton of eggs. When the refrigerator door falls shut, he opens the eggs and pulls one out, cupping it in his hand. Then he throws it at the painting. I watch the yolk trickle down the right side and fall onto the floor. I hope he knows he's cleaning that up. Jonah is in front of me now, holding out an egg.
Feels good. Try it.
I take the egg and hop off the counter. I draw my arm back like I'm throwing a softball, and then I hurl the egg at the painting. He's right. It feels good watching it splatter over a memory Jenny and Chris made together. I take another egg from the carton and throw it. Then another. Sadly, there were only 4 eggs in the carton to begin with, so now I'm out. But I feel like I'm just getting started. Find something else, I say, urging Jonah to open the refrigerator. Something about destroying one of their memories fills me with an adrenaline rush I didn't even know I'd been missing. I'm bouncing on my toes, ready to toss something else, when Jonah hands me a plastic cup of chocolate pudding. I look at it, shrug, and then throw it at the painting. Part of the plastic punches through the canvas.
I meant for you to open the pudding, but that works too.
I laugh and grab another pudding from him, then tear open the film. When I try to throw the pudding at the painting, the contents are too thick and too hard to get out. It's not as satisfying as the egg. Until I dip my fingers into the cup and walk to the painting, I smear the pudding across the canvas. Jonah hands me something else. Here, use this. I look down at the jar of mayo and smile. Chris hated mayonnaise.
I know, Jonah says with a grin.
I dip my whole hand inside of it, scooping out a cold glob of mayonnaise before smearing it on as much of the painting as I can. Jonah is next to me now, squirting mustard on the canvas. Normally, I'd be freaking out about the mess we're making, but the satisfaction far outweighs the dread of the eventual cleanup. Besides, I'm actually laughing. The sound is so foreign, I'd smear mayonnaise all over the house just to keep up this feeling. I've smeared almost an entire jar of mayonnaise over the painting when Jonah starts at it with a bottle of ketchup. God, this feels good. I'm already thinking about what else in this house might hold secret memories between the two of them that we could destroy. I bet there's stuff in Jenny and Jonah's house, too. And Jonah might even have more eggs than I did. The jar of mayonnaise is finally empty. I try to turn around so I can find something else to throw, but the combination of bare feet, egg yolk, and the tile flooring doesn't make for a reliable surface. I slip and grab at Jonah's arm on my way down. In a matter of seconds, we're both on our backs on the kitchen floor. Jonah tries to push himself off the floor, but the mess we've made is everywhere. His palm slips on the tile, and he's on his back again. I'm laughing so hard I roll onto my side in the fetal position, because I'm using muscles I feel like I haven't used in forever. It's the first time I've laughed since Chris and Jenny died. It's also the first time I've heard Jonah laugh since they died. Actually, I haven't heard him laugh since we were teenagers. Our laughter begins to subside. I sigh, just as Jonah turns his head toward me. He's not laughing at all anymore. He's not even smiling. In fact, everything funny about this moment seems to be forgotten as soon as we make eye contact, because it's so quiet now. The adrenaline coursing through me begins to change shape and morphs from a need to destroy a painting into an entirely different need. It's jarring, going from such a fun moment to such a serious one. And I don't even know why it became so serious, but it did. Jonah swallows, and then in a rough whisper he says,
I've never hated watermelon Jolly Ranchers. I only saved them because I knew they were your favorite.
Those words roll through me, slowly warming up the coldest parts of me. I stare at him silently, not because I'm speechless, but because that's probably the sweetest thing a man has ever said to me, and it didn't even come from my husband. Jonah reaches a hand out, wiping away a sticky strand of hair stuck to my cheek. As soon as he touches me, I feel like we're back to that night, sitting together on the blanket in the grass by the lake. He's looking at me the same way he was looking at me back then, right before he whispered,
I'm worried we got it wrong.
I feel like he's about to kiss me, and I have no idea what to do, because I'm not ready for this. I don't even want it. A kiss between us comes with complications. So why am I leaning in toward him? Why is his hand now in my hair? Why am I completely caught up in the thought of what he might taste like? Other than the quickening of our breaths, the kitchen is quiet. So quiet I can hear the hum of an engine as Clara's car pulls into the driveway. Jonah releases me and quickly rolls onto his back. I sit up in a snap, gasping for a breath. We both pull ourselves off the floor and immediately begin cleaning.
Chapter 20. Clara. Jonah's car is in the driveway. Hopefully, he hasn't lost his mind again and is here dropping off Elijah for another week. That's the last thing my mother and I need right now. I'm not sure what we need, but we need something. An intervention? Separate vacations? Hopefully, she's as ready as I am to forget about what happened at school today. If there's one thing I like about my mother, it's her ability to avoid confrontation when she needs time to think about something. I don't want to have to stay home and talk it out tonight, because all I want to do is go inside, change clothes, and head to the theater to see Miller. But I doubt it's going to be that easy. When I walk into the house, I see Elijah asleep in the bassinet next to the wall. I start to walk toward him to give him a quick kiss, but my attention is pulled to the kitchen. The door isn't there anymore, but that's not the weird part. The weird part is my mother, and Jonah, and the mess. My mom is on her hands and knees, wiping up the floor with paper towels. Jonah is pulling down the painting that Aunt Jenny bought my dad for his birthday. There's stuff all over it. I tilt my head, trying to get a closer look, but can't tell exactly what it is. Food? I take a few steps toward the kitchen before I'm able to put it all together. There's an empty mayonnaise jar on the counter, empty pudding cups on the floor, an empty carton of eggs on the counter. There's food on Jonah's shirt and in my mother's hair. What the hell? Did you guys just have a food fight? My mother's head whips in my direction. She had no idea I was even here. Jonah spins around and almost slips. He drops the painting but catches himself by gripping the counter. He and my mother look at each other. Then they both look back at me. Jonah says, stuttering.
We don't really have an acceptable explanation for this.
I raise an eyebrow but keep my thoughts to myself. If I don't judge them for behaving strangely, maybe they won't judge me for not wanting to be here. Okay, well, I'm going to the movies with Lexi. I expect my mother to protest, but she does the opposite. My purse is on the couch if you need money. My eyes narrow in suspicion. Is this some kind of test? Maybe she feels guilty for what she said to me today. Something isn't right, but if I stand here much longer, she might realize it too. I spin on my heels and head toward my bedroom to change. I don't bother taking money out of her purse. Miller never charges me for anything anyway. As soon as I walk into the building, Miller's whole face lights up, and he stops what he's doing to come around the counter. There's no one around, so he pulls me in for a hug, and then kisses me.
Meet me in Theater One. I'll be there in 5 minutes.
But I point at the concession stand. Popcorn. He laughs.
I'll bring you some.
I head toward Theater One, surprised to see it's completely empty and the lights are on. There's nothing even showing on the screen. I take the top row, like I always do, and wait for Miller. In the meantime, I pull up the theater guide on my phone to see what's playing in Theater One. Nothing. The last showing was a cartoon, and it ended an hour ago. I text Miller. Me. Did you say Theater One? There's nothing playing in here tonight. Miller.
Stay there. I'm on my way.
Miller rounds the corner a couple of minutes later, holding a tray of food. Nachos, hot dogs, popcorn, and two drinks. He walks to the top row and takes a seat next to me.
I feel like we were mistreated at school today, he says. I'm pretty sure it's a law that students should get to eat, even if that means taking our food to detention with us.
He hands me a drink and balances the tray of food on the back of the seats in front of us.
Stephen owes me about 5 favors, so he's manning the concession stand for the next hour.
I grab a hot dog and a packet of mustard. Nice. Does that mean this is a date?
Well, don't get used to it. I don't normally go to such extravagant lengths.
We spend the next several minutes eating and talking. I let him do most of the talking because it's nice. He's animated and he smiles a lot. And every time he touches me, I get a stomach full of cliche butterflies. When he's finished eating, he pulls a sucker out of his pocket.
Want one?
I hold out a hand, so he pulls another one out and gives it to me. Do you keep a stash of suckers on you at all times? You're always eating them.
I have an issue with grinding my teeth. The suckers help.
If you keep eating them at the rate you do, you won't have any teeth left to grind.
I've never even had a single cavity, and don't act like you don't enjoy how I taste.
I grin. You do taste pretty good.
Shelby hated my sucker habit, he says. She said they made my lips sticky.
Who? I'm only teasing when I ask that, but he takes it like I've been insulted that he brought her up.
Sorry, I didn't mean to go there. I don't want to be that boyfriend who talks about his ex.
I actually have a lot of questions, but I don't want to be that girlfriend who makes you talk about your ex. He pulls the sucker out of his mouth.
What do you want to know?
I think about his question for a moment. There's a lot I want to know, but I ask him the most pressing question. When she broke up with you after I gave you a ride that day, why did you seem so heartbroken? I've been wondering how he could seem so affected by it that day, but be perfectly okay with it now. It makes me worry he's hiding something. His finger gently brushes over the top of my hand.
I wasn't necessarily upset about her breaking up with me. I was upset because she thought I cheated on her. I didn't want her thinking that, so I was hell-bent on making her believe me.
Does she know you broke up with her for me?
I didn't break up with her for you.
Oh, I say, a little taken aback. You sort of made it sound like you did. Miller readjusts himself in the seat, sliding his fingers through mine.
I broke up with her because when I went to sleep at night, I wasn't thinking about her. And when I woke up in the morning, I wasn't thinking about her. But I didn't break up with her just so I could date you. I would have broken up with her whether you and I ended up together or not.
It doesn't seem like there's much of a difference in breaking up with someone for someone else or because of someone else, but it feels like it makes all the difference in the world when he explains it. Has it been a weird adjustment? You guys were together for a long time. He shrugs.
It's been different. Her mom never cared if I spent the night at her house on weekends, so Saturday nights at home with Gramps are taking some getting used to.
Her mom let you sleep at her house? Like, in her bed?
It's unconventional, I know. But her parents are pretty lenient in a lot of areas. And technically, she's an adult in college. I guess that had a lot to do with it.
My mom will never let you spend the night, just putting that out there. Miller laughs.
Believe me, I got that vibe from her. I'll be surprised if I'm even allowed to visit you in broad daylight.
I hate that he feels this way. I hate that my mother made him feel this way. And if I'm being honest, it worries me that it'll be a turnoff for him later down the line if she never accepts that he's my boyfriend. I can't even believe I'm saying that. Miller Adams is my boyfriend. We're both facing each other now, our bodies turned toward each other in the theater seats. It's so quiet in here that we can hear the rumbling of the movie playing on the other side of the wall. I try not to think about everything he just said, because now I'm worried about all the times he stayed at Shelby's house, all the times he slept in her bed. Will he eventually miss that? I've never had sex. And with the way my mother has been acting, I'm not sure she'll ever allow Miller to come over. She might even put a stop to me going out altogether, just to try and break us up. I hope not, but with her behavior this past month, I wouldn't put it past her. I feel like Miller has been completely honest with me, so I want to do the same. I pull the sucker out of my mouth and stare at it. So, just so you're aware, I'm a virgin.
I know a cure for that,
Miller says. My eyes flash up to his, but then he laughs.
I'm kidding, Clara.
He leans toward me and kisses me on the shoulder.
I'm glad you told me, but I'm not in any hurry. At all.
Whatever. You're used to getting it every weekend.
You'll eventually grow bored with not having sex and you'll go back to her.
I immediately cover my mouth with my hand. Oh my God, why do I sound so insecure? Please pretend I didn't just say all that. He laughs a little, but then he looks at me intently.
You don't have to worry. I already get more out of not having sex with you than I did during my entire relationship with her.
I like him so much. More than I thought possible. Every minute we spend together makes me like him more than I liked him the previous minute. When I decide I'm ready, I hope it's with you. Miller smiles at that.
Trust me, I'm not going to talk you out of it.
I think about what our first time might be like, when it'll be. I look over at him and grin. Our first kiss was a cliche coffee shop kiss. Maybe losing my virginity should be cliche too. Miller raises an eyebrow.
I don't know, they might ban us from Starbucks.
I laugh. I'm talking about prom. It's 5 months from now. If we're still together, I'd like it to be a cliche after prom deflowering. My choice of words makes Miller laugh. He takes his sucker out of his mouth and grabs mine from my hand and sets them on the food tray. Then he leans in and kisses me briefly. When he pulls back, he says,
You're getting ahead of yourself. I haven't even asked you to prom yet.
You should ask me then.
You don't want one of those elaborate promposals?
I shake my head. Promposals are stupid. I don't want an elaborate anything. He hesitates, like maybe he doesn't believe me. Then he nods once and says,
Okay then. Clara Grant, will you go to prom with me and have cliche after prom sex with me?
I would love to. Miller grins and kisses me. I kiss him back with a smile, but I can feel part of myself sinking. Aunt Jenny would have loved this story.
Chapter 21. Morgan. My kitchen might be cleaner than it's ever been. I'm not sure if it was because Jonah is an excellent cleaner, he cleaned the majority of it, or if it's because he's trying to erase any proof of that near kiss in the kitchen so that we don't have a single reminder of it. My guilt has been palpable since Clara left to go to the movies. Jonah must feel the same because neither of us spoke as we cleaned. And as soon as Elijah began to wake up, I offered to feed him because Elijah is the only thing I feel like I'm doing right in my life. It seems he's starting to recognize me because he smiles when he sees me. I've been keeping him occupied in the living room for an hour now. Jonah cleaned the entire kitchen. I didn't expect him to, and even told him not to worry about it at one point, but he kept cleaning. I would have done it, but I was honestly relieved when Elijah woke up. I'd rather not be in the same room as Jonah right now. Elijah's getting stronger. I'm sitting back on the couch and holding him up while he pushes his legs against my stomach. I'm making baby sounds at him when Jonah carries my kitchen door to the garage. Elijah yawns, so I pull him to my chest and pat him gently on the back. It's past his bedtime, and despite the 30-minute nap he took while Jonah and I destroyed the kitchen, Elijah still seems like he's ready to pass out. He grows limp against my chest as he begins to fall into slumber. I press my cheek to the top of his head, wishing more than anything that I didn't grow sad when I think about the hand he's been dealt. He's lucky to have Jonah. A man who stepped up, knowing there's a huge possibility he didn't follow.